Most people, when they hear the word God, don't think of the storyline of the Hebrew Scriptures.
Hey, this is John at the Bible Project, and today on the podcast, we're beginning a conversation about God. Who is the God of the Bible? That's what we're going to talk about for the next season on this podcast, and it's going to be an incredible journey. But before we get too deep into the story of the Bible and what it means to experience the God of the Bible, we need to stop and come to grips with the fact that
the word God in English is a terribly confusing, unclear word.
The word God's a confusing word because God is not a name. God is a title. It's a generic way to talk about any spiritual being.
So, the problem is that when we use the capital word letter G, we're using a title to refer to a specific deity or spirit being that has a specific story and attributes, namely the Jewish and Christian God.
But Judeo-Christian belief is that there is only one true creator God of the universe.
There is one chief supreme God, the God of Israel, revealed to Abraham. Christians believe revealed in Jesus, who has no rivals, but he is the King of kings and Lord of lords and God of gods.
God of gods. That makes it sound like the Bible talks about there being more than one God. But that can't be true, right? There's only one God. That's what Christians believe. That's what monotheism means.
I'm so fascinated with how did this happen? How did a modern definition of monotheism come to be what Christians believe when it's not, in fact, at all how the Bible talks about the identity of God?
Yeah, if you're like me, this just made you really uncomfortable. But hold on there, we're going to talk it through, and what we'll find is that all the confusion has to do with what we mean when we use the word God. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
You know, I have all this stuff in my head right now.
You've been working on this for the last 5 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah. I'm just thinking this is like a classic moment where like I have all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to own.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to get you to own all of this.
I love that goal. We need like some like telepathy cord.
I know.
Some brain
right.
Direct link.
But instead I have to articulate.
You have to put it into language.
Every one of these ideas.
And then I've got to listen to those words
yep.
And unpack them in my own psyche.
So that what's inside of my head can be inside of yours. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, language. Information theory is interesting, that our brains aren't computers in the sense that they're very different than how computers work, but our brains process information. The theory of information processing is the same. And so like when information is in the form of, let's say, sound waves coming out of our mouth versus digital information going through a cord versus maybe analog information on a tape, versus neurons firing in your brain. It's all the same thing, just in different formats.
Different modes.
Different mediums.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
It is.
We're going to talk about God.
We're setting up a conversation to begin the process for a theme video for the Bio Project that we're going to call God.
Yeah, the theme of God, which it's not really a theme. God is a character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't have any other theme videos on characters.
No, we don't. No. But the way we're going to be talking about the unfolding of God's identity, it fits the category of theme. In terms of it's a set of words and vocabulary and ideas that are introduced on page one. They undergo development throughout the narrative arc of the Bible. The story of Jesus is a climactic, new unfolding of the identity of God that's in continuity with what came before, but also takes some significant leaps forward, and then it all comes to closure on the last page. So it's true, it qualifies as a biblical theme.
It comes to closure.
Yes. Yeah, in as much as you can ever bring history to a closure. But this is an important topic. We could call this video The Trinity.
Which a lot of people want.
Which a lot of people want. And it's about that. But how we're going to end up with the Trinity isn't going to be by starting with it.
Okay.
Like all our theme videos, the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. And so the identity of God, God's nature and identity, undergoes a narrative development through the sequence of the storyline. And I think there's real value in pausing to let the story unfold God's character in its own way, in its own order. Yeah, there you go. So it's actually going to conclude with the three-in-one God, Father, Son, and Spirit. But I think starting there won't help people grasp the significance of the Trinity.
Okay. So we're not going to assume the Trinity when we start.
We're just going to let the story tell itself.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that more as we go on. But that's the video, God. And I thought about calling it the God's identity. And then John talked me down off that one.
Me?
Because you're like, yeah, the identity of God or God's identity.
I don't remember.
Well, that. I just think we go for more basic vocabulary.
Oh. Just God.
In our...
This video is about God.
Titles. Yeah, just God. That's what it's about. It's about God. It's about a whole bunch of things, really specific things about God, but it's about God. So let's just call it that.
I think that's great because it's a word we use all the time that we take much of it for granted.
Yes.
And from the little hints I've been getting from you is that it's a lot more interesting and it'll be a lot of unexpected things as we peel back this onion layers.
Yeah, this whole topic of God's identity, of the one God, the one true God of Israel, this word or concept of monotheism, the existence of other gods, how those relate to the one God, and then... Yeah, so the rabbit hole goes quite deep. And I've been interested in it for a long time. And I actually, it was through my years in local church ministry that I've come to the conviction that this is a really important topic for followers of Jesus to process through so we can speak intelligently to our culture about this. So that's actually where I think it'll be most useful for you and I to begin talking, which is what I call them three problems with God talk in the modern West.
Okay.
So this isn't about the video as such, but for me, I wanted to ask myself, like, what am I hoping this video accomplishes, or what's the problem that I think this video could help? So three problems when the word God comes up in the English language, at least. And I know we have supporters all around the world, many of whom, you know, don't speak English as a first language. And so forgive us that we're going to talk about the English language and the problems with the English word God. But that's our context. And so that's where we live. And
I got to imagine it's pretty similar in most cultures.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, these words in different languages of deity come from really different origins, especially if it's different hemisphere, or the East or the West. Okay, let's start with the first problem. The word God in English is a terribly confusing, unclear word.
Really?
In modern English.
God. Short and sweet.
Yes.
Dude in the sky.
So, okay,
what's confusing about that?
Yeah.
I mean, my 6-year-old gets it. No, seriously, he's like...
Yeah, what does it mean for Paxton?
Yeah, I haven't purposefully sat him down and tried to explain God to him.
Yeah.
But... through church, just other conversations, whatever, he just gets it. He's like, there's God created things.
Yeah.
It was funny, the other day, he pointed to a fork and he said, what is that made out of? And I said, well, it's made out of metal. And he didn't know what metal was. And he was confused. He goes, no. Like, what's it made out of? And I said, metal. He goes, no. What did God make that we turned it into that fork.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So he wanted like the base material.
He's thinking of like, yeah.
And so I had to tell him like metal, it's a kind of rock, I think. I don't know. And that's what God made. Actually, a sun made it, but
yeah, that's
God
right.
made the
yeah,
sun.
It's like a, yeah, exploded star, then the dust.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he gets it.
Yeah, right.
He gets that. I don't know exactly what's in his head, yeah. but it's not that confusing to him.
So that's a good example, though. So likely he has a personal being. You think a personal being with will and intention in his imagination when he thinks of the word God? A personal being? When he says, what did God make that we made it out of?
Yeah.
What does that word refer to?
Yeah, I'm
Let's
assuming.
Create the profile.
I'm assuming he's thinking.
A personal being.
Of a personal being.
Uh-huh. Who's like, has power to generate a universe where there's metal.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that I don't know. I don't remember being six, but yeah. I guess you just kind of have to look around and assume like, well,
but yeah,
this house is here because someone's made it.
That's right. Okay, yeah.
You know, I saw my dad make my bed.
Yeah.
And that's why that's here.
Uh-huh.
So why is the trees here? And yeah. why is the
Sure. Yeah, that's
the
right.
birds here?
That is.
Someone must have made it.
But to then conclude, a singular personal being is
yeah.
therefore responsible for
Well, he got that from
all of that.
From the culture yeah, that
so
we're in.
Exactly, yeah. right. So you're socialized into that kind of idea because
yep.
you could grow up in a different culture where
yeah.
the material trees are themselves an aspect of the divine.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or there are many gods, not just one.
Yep.
There's all kinds of gods.
Or there's no God.
Or there's no God. So you could use the word God or gods
right.
to actually refer to a lot of really different kinds of beings.
Yeah.
So the English word God can describe many different kinds of deities.
Yeah.
that, right, that could mm-hmm. have whatever created or be responsible for the universe.
Right.
So that's a part of what I mean when I say it's not a very helpful word.
Got it.
Because it's ambiguous. And part of that is because the English word is a title. It's actually not it's not a name.
Mm-hmm.
God isn't any being's name.
right.
It's a title for a kind of being.
Right, like angel or... Yeah,
spirit, human.
Or human.
It's a category.
It's a category.
In English, God is a category of being. But you're right. It does get filled out with typical content in the modern Western culture. You named a couple at the beginning. Like the big, what, something big guy, some big guy.
Big guy.
Upstairs.
Oh,
what did
yeah.
you say?
I don't know. Dude in the sky, I
the
don't
big
know.
Guy upstairs?
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just say the word God in a room of 50 people.
Right.
And the same thing is not going to come into everyone's mind.
50 people all in the same church or 50 people scattered across the city?
Yeah, you're on the bus.
You're on a bus.
And you say, I believe in God.
yeah.
And you think you're being bold and standing, whatever, trying to represent your faith. But what that overlooks is the word God enters, the sound waves enter 50 different people's ears on the bus.
Yeah.
And
conjures up different
and
categories.
And very, very different portraits because of their family history, their religious or non-religious experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So God is a title that can refer to many different kinds of beings.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing they would have in common is that they are likely all invisible and powerful, probably more powerful than humans.
Not the Greek gods. I mean, they're more powerful, but they're not invisible.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. If you were in ancient Greece, you might spot
Zeus. Might run into one.
Yeah, you might run into one. Okay. So that's the first problem about God talk is that it's a title that can refer to many different kinds of beings from many different religious traditions.
Okay.
That's the first thing. The second thing is if a singular, all-powerful, creator, ruler type of being is what comes into somebody's mind,
mm-hmm.
that's fascinating because that certainly isn't what all humans have believed about deities or a deity for all of history. That's a very specific... That idea of a personal being who's the creator and ruler of everything has a history, intellectual yeah. history.
By the way, are you using deity and God interchangeably?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
I am, yeah. Because that itself is it's a legacy that comes from the Jewish monotheistic mm-hmm. tradition mm-hmm. that's been passed on to the modern West largely through its daughter, its religious daughter, Christianity. Mm-hmm. So, but there's actually quite a lot of confusion about that. So that's that word, monotheism.
Just confusion about what?
Okay, there's one God. Many people think, Jewish people believe, there's one God. What do Christians believe? There's one God.
Right.
What's the title given to that belief? It's a monotheistic religion.
Yeah.
The confusion is that...
And during a time where there wasn't other monotheistic religions.
Yeah. Monotheism, like really passionate monotheism,
yeah.
is the legacy of the Jewish and Christian tradition
right.
in the history of
everyone else is really fine and just assumes there's many gods.
Yep. Most religions for most of human history have been some form of polytheism, many different gods, mm-hmm. or pantheism.
Everything is God,
or some version in between. There actually are a handful of other monotheistic religions that have popped up throughout history, but nothing like the Jewish Christian tradition. It's unique.
Okay.
And the fact that a singular, all-powerful creator ruler being is what probably comes into most Westerners' minds mm-hmm. when they hear the word God, that shows you the influence of these particular religions.
Yeah.
In our history, because that's not what most humans, for most
over
of human
history yeah.
have believed. Here's what's fascinating. You can go look up at dictionary.com, Oxford English Dictionary. If you look up the term monotheism, mm-hmm. it gives you a definition that doesn't actually correspond to what Jews and Christians have believed about God for most of their history. And so here's the English, this is dictionary.com. So English definition of monotheism, the belief that there is only one God. Like that's mm-hmm. the short definition.
Yeah.
The belief that there is only one God.
Yep.
And that seems intuitive. Mono.
One.
Theism. God. Right? One God.
Mm-hmm.
The implication being, therefore, there are no other beings that can be described or identified by the noun God or gods. Monotheism, there is only one God, which means there are no other
yes.
gods.
And you asked a bus full of Christians, they would say, yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. There is only one God.
Including me.
Yeah.
this is what
yeah.
we learn. This is what we're taught.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Is that what you learned when you start following Jesus?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's only one God.
There's only one God.
Yes, yeah. But if as I'm going to force you to do, if you really stop and think that through, if you're a follower of Jesus and you've read the Bible at any length, you don't actually believe that.
All right.
So anyway, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
So the modern English definition of monotheism, that there is only one being who can be described with the noun God.
Mm-hmm. One deity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you go. I'll just give you the bottom line. If you look at the belief about the God of the Bible that you could use to describe monotheism, it would not fit that description. What it fits, if you just read both Old and New Testaments, is that it's a devotion and allegiance to the particular God who revealed himself to Abraham and Israel and ultimately in Jesus, and the belief that that God is the supreme God, creator and ruler of all, among all other gods who might claim your allegiance.
That's not what the Bible says. Well, what's interesting is there are verses in the Bible that make you go, wait, did they believe there was other gods? And then usually you go, well, no, it's just that's the culture and blah, 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 like... So it's just kind of like...
Yeah. So we'll talk about that.
But for me, and I guarantee almost every Christian, Protestant, Catholic, they would listen to you say that and go, that is BS. Like there's not many gods in which the God of the Bible is the supreme God. That sounds like...
Sounds like
a cult. Sounds like the Bible.
Sounds like you've been reading your Bible... not even that closely.
Gosh.
Like, just read it on its face value meaning.
Well.
And you walk away with what, you know, Bible nerds of different stripes call biblical monotheism or ancient Jewish monotheism, which had room for a populated spiritual universe, among which, they believed, there is one chief supreme God,
mm-hmm.
the God of Israel, revealed to Abraham, Christians believe, revealed in Jesus, who has no rivals.
Okay.
But he is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and God of Gods.
God of Gods?
Yeah.
Is that in the Bible?
It is. So, there you go. So, that's confusing. You're making my point.
I feel like you're teaching me a different religion.
You're making my point for me that not only is the English word God unclear in English, the concept of monotheism, I'm so fascinated with how did this happen? How did a modern definition of monotheism come to be what Christians believe when it's not, in fact, at all how the Bible talks about the identity of God?
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, one step at a time.
One step at a time. Here's the third. So that's the first two. Here's the third one. Then once you have those two confusions...
The first one being the God is not a name, it's a title, and it can be ambiguous what you're referring to.
Yep. Can refer to many different types of beings.
And in human history, if you took a human out of any time in human history, likely they thought of it very different than a monotheistic God. And the second one being the way we think about monotheism is not the way the Bible thinks about monotheism.
Correct. Yep. So you combine those two, and then... try and talk to somebody in the modern West about how Jesus is God.
Mm.
And you have a situation ripe for total miscommunication.
Okay.
Not even just miscommunication. I think to say Jesus is God with that kind of confusion in the air is actually irresponsible. Because to say Jesus is God means you're leaving up to the other person's imagination what that says about Jesus, right? If God is unclear, it can conjure up the big guy upstairs, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to let you in the pearly gates if you've been naughty or nice or something. That's what comes to many people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And then to say Jesus is God is a total misrepresentation of Jesus. Because they're equating Jesus with the big guy upstairs who's going to let you into the pearly gates based on whether you've been naughty or nice. Are you with me? I'm just saying as an act of communication, you're not helping somebody at all.
Does the Bible say Jesus is God?
It does in very Jewish categories.
So,
but it doesn't do it in the way I just did it.
People are turning off the podcast and deciding to...
Yeah.
Listen to something more Christian. Okay.
The Bible is making the claim that Jesus is the embodiment of the particular God whose story is told in the Old and New Testaments.
The embodiment.
The human incarnation embodiment.
Why can't that be synonymous, saying Jesus is God and Jesus is the embodiment of God?
Because most people, when they hear the word God, don't think of the storyline of the Hebrew scriptures.
If you're saying Jesus is this picture you have of a dude up in heaven, then that's confusing people.
Yeah.
But if you just say Jesus is God... and someone doesn't have a formed view of what God is.
Yeah. Then their question is, what God?
Yeah.
Jesus is what God?
Right? Yeah, or what do you mean by Jesus is God?
Ah, yes. And in that case, you can sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah.
The point is almost nobody comes with a clean or a blank slate when they hear the word God.
Yeah.
We have a preloaded set of ideas and stories about God, and then we take Jesus and fit those into that container. And what I'm saying is the way the biblical narrative works, it's precisely the opposite. It's that the whole story, 3/4 of the Bible, is giving you a very detailed portrait of the character and nature and purpose of the God of Israel. And then the story of Jesus comes along and says Jesus is the human incarnation of that particular God, the God of Israel. And that's very different because I can't assume that I always assume that no one has the story of the Old Testament in their heads.
Yeah.
It's a pretty safe assumption.
It's a long, yeah, confusing story.
Totally. Which is why my notes are 32 pages long for this topic. But do you see, that's the problem.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I'm trying
to say.
We like
to just pass out New Testaments and just say,
yes,
read about, yeah, Jesus. Is
and I get that. I mean, Jesus is awesome. And personally, like, it was hearing stories about Jesus all through my mid to late teens, mm-hmm, that began to challenge my concept of God. I had a concept of God growing up in Portland,
yeah,
here in whatever late Western culture. And then it was actually the stories about Jesus that began to challenge my definitions of God. And so the stories of Jesus began to remake what that word referred to,
yeah,
in my imagination. And then once I started to read the Bible, then it continued. So I want to start with the word God in Hebrew because it's, first of all, it's awesome. It works differently, yeah, than our word God does in English.
Yeah, teach me that.
So this is familiar. This is how we've done many of these theme videos. Mm-hmm. We begin with our English word about spirit or whatever, covenant or holiness. Mm-hmm. And then we learn the biblical word, and mm-hmm, then that invites us into a whole different way of thinking about things.
Okay.
So the English word God, we've already talked about it. Interesting. If you spell God with a capital G, this is Oxford English Dictionary. If you spell God with a capital G, you are referring to the God of the monotheistic religions.
Okay.
Who is a singular being, creator and ruler, source of all moral authority, supreme. However, if you spell God with a lowercase g, mm-hmm, you could be referring to a God from any other religion in the history of human religions, mm-hmm, which is defined by the Oxford English Dictionary as a superhuman being, mm-hmm, or a spirit worshipped as having power over nature or human fortunes, a deity.
Okay.
So the problem is that when we use the capital word letter G, we're using a title to refer to a specific deity or spirit being that has a specific story and attributes, namely the Jewish and Christian God. Are you with me? When I spell God with a capital G, the Oxford English Dictionary says, I'm referring to the Jewish Christian God. I'm using the title.
Oh, right.
I'm using an ambiguous title.
Yeah.
But I give it a capital G.
And now it's referring to the Jewish Christian. Yeah.
To one particular God.
Yeah, that's how we use
the word God.
Yes.
That is not at all how the word God works in Hebrew.
Okay.
But this is the culprit of like 75% of the miscommunication.
Right.
About the word God.
Okay.
So you probably know the word God, although you're looking down now, mm-hmm, but you probably knew it beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Elohim.
Some people Elohim. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's actually the first sentence of the Bible. In the beginning, Elohim created the sky and the land. So even right here in the first sentence of the Bible, in Hebrew, it's also a title.
Mm-hmm.
And it means essentially what lowercase g
does. So it's like in the beginning, a God created the heavens and the earth?
That's the question.
Because like if it's a title, mm-hmm, like human.
Yep, yep.
And would it be in the beginning, yeah, human,
yeah,
created the, yeah, heavens and the earth?
And this is both a translation debate because oftentimes the biblical authors will put the word the in front of the word Elohim to specify that we're talking about the God of Israel.
Who will put the word the?
Biblical authors. In other words, it's very common for biblical authors to refer to
put the Hebrew word
God.
The.
They'll put the Hebrew word the. It's the word ha. Mm. So ha Elohim, the God.
So it'd be like the human.
Yes, the human. The human named John walked into the room.
But, yeah, if you're telling a story about me.
Yes, yeah.
And you're telling it to a bunch of ants.
Yeah, yeah.
About this guy.
Correct.
And you're telling these ants.
Yeah, yeah.
The human. He's coming to kill us all and destroy our anthill.
Yeah, totally.
And you're like, what human? The human.
The human. Yeah. Yeah. So interestingly, that's not how Genesis 1 begins. Genesis 1 uses a unspecific title to refer to the particular God whose story is going to be told here. That's Genesis 1. In Genesis 2, you get...
Wait, Genesis 1, it just says Elohim.
Just says Elohim all the way through.
Just...
A deity.
A deity.
Then in Genesis 2, you get the phrase Yahweh Elohim, which tells you, oh, yes, the Elohim that did what he did in chapter 1, that was Yahweh Elohim. Stories are set next to each other so that you compare the main actor in each of those stories. So, but you do know that it's a singular Elohim.
From Genesis 1.
From Genesis 1. Yep, yeah. all the verbs are singular. Here's a little more about this word, because this is an interesting word in Hebrew, Elohim. So that's it's a long form of the word. There's many forms of this word that appear in the Bible. The short form is the word El. It's just the first two letters, El, over 200 times in the Hebrew Bible phrase. So it's very common, El. There's another singular form, Elohah. So instead of Elohim, Elohah. And those are both singular. That occurs almost 60 times. And they all in our English translations just get translated God.
Why are there a discrepancy between the ways that they're said?
Well, there's a fascinating history to this word. So El is a short form, Elohah.
El makes sense because it's like you got human and you got man or something.
Okay.
Just shorten it.
Yeah, shorten it. Human, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, take off the
take H-U. Off the hue.
Yeah, that's right.
Just make it shorter. So, it's easier to say.
That's right. So El, Elohah, actually, literally, probably the way great-grandpa Moses said it would be Elo. El, Elo, Elohim.
Okay.
Three forms. Three forms.
Probably just how people have gotten used to saying it.
How the word developed.
How the word developed.
What's interesting is that the...
Great-grandpa Moses, is that what you just said?
Yeah, like...
I love it.
How he's, you know, it's like Old English.
Yeah.
You know, how like our great-great-grandparents spoke English.
Yeah.
How
great, it's like that picture that conjured when you said
grandpa
that.
Grandpa Moses spoke Hebrew would be different than later forms of Hebrew. So you have El, Elohah, and then Elohim.
Okay.
And that third one, Elohim... That im is significant because it's the plural noun ending. It's like S in English.
So this is true. Wait. So when you put an im behind a word, you're
making it plural.
You're making it plural.
Yep. Unless you specify by other indicators in context that you're using a plural noun to refer to a singular reality.
Which
you can do in Hebrew.
Which you can do in Hebrew.
Yeah.
We talked about that with the skies.
With skies. Yeah, it's a great example. Yep. That's right.
Because that's a plural.
Correct. Yep.
That means a singular, large thing.
Yep.
What's that called?
Well, that was called, I forget the plural of complexity or something like that.
Right.
So there's something similar happening here, but it creates an ambiguity in Hebrew. Because the word Elohim is technically plural, you can be reading a sentence in the Bible, like in the book of Exodus. Oh, no, like in the first commandment. Have no other gods before me. And the word is?
Elohim.
Elohim. Have no other Elohim before me.
Which is the plural for God.
Yes, gods. Yeah. Who gets humiliated in the 10 plagues of Egypt, according to Exodus chapter 12? The Elohim of Egypt, the gods of Egypt. So you can use the common plural noun. But then when it's referring to the God of Israel, the verbs, all the other words connected to Elohim are always in the singular. So the first sentence of the Bible, Elohim created. And created in Hebrew is marked as a singular.
Because the verbs have
That's right. Yeah, in English, most of our verbs are not marked, as whether it's one person doing it or many.
So what does that mean that the noun is plural but the verb is singular?
What it means is, in this case, we're talking about one specific Elohim, not many Elohim.
Then why didn't they use the word El or Eloah?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you mean exactly?
No, I'm just saying that you put your thumb on it. You put your thumb on the ambiguity in Hebrew.
Okay.
So we don't have this ambiguity in English.
Right.
But it is there in Hebrew. It creates fascinating challenges.
Well, we could duplicate the ambiguity. We could say, in the beginning, God's, no, I guess we can't.
No, you can't do it.
You can't do it.
Because it's referring to one specific Elohim, because it's a singular verb. One, so an Elohim, created. You don't know which one, though.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You read page one, you're like, oh, which Elohim?
Yeah.
Now, that wouldn't occur to a modern Westerner because God.
Well, that wouldn't occur to a Jewish reader of the Bible either, because they read other portions of the Bible.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But again, if you were trying to come to this with a blank slate.
Yeah.
So here's what you walk away from, this basic point then. The word Elohim doesn't refer to a specific God.
So if we just had Genesis 1 and that's all we had, then there would be a big debate about, well, which God do they think created?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Everything. In English, we have this convention where if we put a capital G, it means the God of the Bible.
Right.
And if it's lowercase g, any other God. In Hebrew, there's just these words, El, Eloah, Elohim. Specifically, Elohim is used within the Bible itself to refer to gods other than
Like the gods of Egypt.
Yes, the gods, the Elohim of Egypt. Don't have no other Elohim before me. It's the first commandment. So it presumes there are other Elohim that you could have before you.
Or that you could try to have imaginary Elohim.
But whether they're real or not isn't the point. The point is the Israelites sure thought they were real.
Really?
And so therefore they wanted to have, we want to worship.
Well, okay,
we want to worship Baal.
But I guess the question that then a modern Christian would ask is, well, just because they thought they were real doesn't mean they were real.
Correct. I mean, that's the question that you got to talk about, and I'm going to force us not to talk about it for a while, but we're going to eventually talk about that.
Okay.
I'm just saying the word means...
Got it.
The word means deity.
So right now you're saying it's totally cool to still just say there are no other gods. At
this stage in the conversation, I'd say the basic meaning of the word Elohim is either referring to the singular God of Israel or all the other gods.
Yeah. Well, because culture at large believes there are other gods.
Canaanite neighbors believed there are other gods.
The Canaanite neighbors.
Yep. And many Israelites were tempted to believe that those gods were more powerful than the God of Israel.
Yes.
Thus the first commandment.
But what we haven't established is whether or not there are actually other gods.
Right.
Or did they just think there were other gods?
Okay, right. That is a question that is yet to be addressed.
Okay.
So, here's one that'll throw you for a loop. Go down to this 1 Samuel reference here.
Okay.
This is a strange story.
Okay.
This is a story about King Saul, Israel's first king.
Mm-hmm.
And he isn't hearing from Yahweh, the God of Israel, anymore. No guidance, no words of guidance or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the Philistines are breathing down his neck, big army coming his way. Samuel, who was an important prophet, has died. And so he goes to this sorceress, who's a spirit medium. And she has him conjure up the deceased Samuel. And she does it. And then in the story here, it's, and when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out and said, I see an Elohim coming up out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the Hebrew word Elohim means, it can refer to the one God of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It can refer to the gods worshipped by other nations, it can refer to a deceased human.
That is somehow...
Conjured up. Yeah, by a sorceress.
Spiritually.
Yes.
So it's a very loose word.
So it's a word whose meaning is very different. Its range of, again, different
it's
languages.
Its range of meaning is broad.
Is broader and has a different set of nuances than our English word God.
Okay.
And in no English translation does this passage get translated. I see gods coming up out of the ground, or I see a god.
Right. Because our word God doesn't have the same broad meaning.
It doesn't ever refer to the disembodied spirit of a deceased person. Okay. We have the word spirit to refer to that.
Right.
So that's actually our first clue as to the meaning of this word here, of Elohim.
What's the clue? That it's
the
broad.
The fact that Elohim can refer to the disembodied presence of a deceased human, mm-hmm. means that Elohim has a certain range of meaning and connections that's different than our English word God.
Okay.
So this is just like we did with spirit, mm-hmm. or holiness.
Yeah.
You have to flush what you,
yeah.
what categories we're bringing from our English vocabulary.
Yeah, try to understand the Hebrew category,
yeah.
first.
Yeah.
When and the then Bible's, figure out how to translate it to
right.
English.
When the Bible says God, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So, first of all, here's one first implication. So Yahweh, the God of Israel, is an Elohim.
Okay.
But he's not apparently the only Elohim,
mm-hmm.
because there's the Elohim of Egypt. There's other Elohim that should not be put before Yahweh. Yeah.
And they could all be fake.
Yep. Yeah, that's right, whether it's fake or real, right? But Samuel wasn't fake. Like, I think
yeah.
they encountered something very real
yeah.
that in Hebrew could be referred to as an Elohim.
Okay.
So, here, I'll just let someone else do it. This is from a Hebrew Bible nerd named Michael Heiser.
Yeah.
Who actually has some great...
The Naked Bible podcast.
...books and a great podcast.
Yeah.
That's called The Naked Bible Podcast.
Yeah.
Yep. And he has a book... called The Unseen Realm, that's been one of the helpful resources that I've been looking at as I put all this together. So here's how Heiser puts it. If he says, if we're trying to just understand how the Hebrew Bible uses the word God, Yahweh is an Elohim, but no other Elohim is Yahweh. Elohim, Heiser concludes, is a place of residence term. The word tells you what the proper domain is for that being. By nature, the God of Israel, the many Elohim of God's counsel, demons, angels, the departed dead like Samuel, these can all be referred to with the word Elohim. So, what do they have in common? They're part of a non-physical domain, right? That's related to, but also distinct from the physical embodied domain. So an Elohim is by definition and by nature a disembodied entity. So the word can refer to many different beings who inhabit that realm. So that's his conclusion, and I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
To at least say there's a common denominator between all these uses of Elohim, but it's different than an English word God.
Okay. So it's a big bucket word to refer to any type of disembodied being.
The Elohim of Egypt. The Elohim of
Samuel,
of Babylon, the Elohim that is Samuel coming up out of the ground is a disembodied, and the Elohim that is named Yahweh,
so,
the God of Israel.
So basically, the confusion we talked about at the beginning all comes down to this discrepancy, where our word God is specific to a type of divine being.
Right. The all-powerful creator ruler.
Right.
Yeah.
And we understand, most Christians understand this idea of other spiritual beings, angels, demons. But we wouldn't call those gods. But in Hebrew, there's a big bucket word, Elohim.
Yes.
And it can refer to Yahweh, the supreme God of, as the Bible presents him. It can refer to the gods of other cultures. It could refer to a spirit. Does it ever refer to angels or demons as Elohim?
Yes, which begs the question of, if those can be called Elohim, then is angel and demon just another type of title for Elohim, gods?
Another type of title. Or is it like a subtype?
A subtype, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It in essence just means spiritual being.
Elohim.
Elohim means a spiritual being.
Okay.
A non-physical being.
In the beginning... a spiritual being created the heavens and the earth.
What spiritual being?
And well, in Genesis 2.
Genesis 2, you learn.
Yahweh, the spiritual being, created.
Yeah, which in English, in Genesis 2, you turn to Genesis 2, and it says the Lord God, which means
because Lord being Yahweh.
Yahweh.
And God being
God
Elohim.
Elohim. So the it's the phrase Yahweh Elohim, the Yahweh God.
So if you were to do a translation of Genesis 1:1, would it be, in the beginning... a spiritual being created the land and the sea, the sky and the land.
Well, it's tricky because for the biblical authors, they don't just think any spiritual being. They're thinking of Yahweh, but the language that they use...
So they would say the spiritual being.
Well, I think they would say God. I mean,
Elohim.
It's tricky because in English.
No, I'm asking not how a Hebrew speaker. How would you try to say in English the best way a Hebrew speaker would be thinking?
Oh, I understand. Yeah, I understand.
You probably just would say God because that's what they're,
yeah.
what they're thinking.
Yeah. Yes. And perhaps using the lowercase g. In English to try and communicate what's going on is lowercase g God. Oh, which one? Well, keep reading. Well, and actually, that's not. There's only one Elohim who has the power and capabilities of generating a universe like ours within the convictions biblical for the biblical authors. Mm-hmm. But you don't get that Elohim's name until page two.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're a Jewish person who grew up just worshiping Canaanite gods and you knew nothing about Yahweh because it had been forgotten.
That's right.
You haven't been told.
Yeah. You're an ancient Moabite reading Genesis 1.
Yeah. And you get Genesis 1. You get Genesis. Mm-hmm. Someone's telling it to you. Mm-hmm. And they say, in the beginning, Elohim created. Mm-hmm. You would go, which Elohim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you'd get to page 2 and you'd be like, oh, the Elohim.
So to create the same impact for an English reader, you would say, in the beginning, a spiritual being created the land and the sky.
Yeah, totally.
The heavens and the earth.
Yeah, I've never actually thought to put it that way.
And then you would, as an English reader, be like, okay, what spiritual being?
Yeah. Well, you would walk away from the story going, that's a very powerful spiritual being.
Sure, yeah. That's a pretty, yeah.
Wow.
His words created.
Yeah, I know my people, Moab, they, because Baal is an Elohim, but boy, I don't know any stories of Baal doing what that Elohim just did on page one of Genesis.
Yeah.
So that's a very powerful Elohim. Mm. That's what an ancient Canaanite.
Yeah.
This is all sanctified imagination, but.
Sanctified?
Oh, it's like we're using we're trying to biblically imagine ourselves back into the ancient world.
Yeah.
So there's probably all kinds of things we're not thinking of, but I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure we're doing it absolutely correctly.
So all of a sudden, phrases in the Bible begin to be able to make sense, like at the top of the next page there, a phrase like Deuteronomy 10:17. For Yahweh, this is Moses to Israel, Yahweh is your Elohim. He is the Elohim of Elohim and the Lord of Lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome one.
How is that normally translated?
God of gods.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Deuteronomy 10:17. Yahweh is your Elohim. Yeah, Yahweh is your Elohim. He is the Elohim among all the other Elohim. Mm-hmm. Do you see how, even though it's the same Hebrew word, in the first, singular.
I like just rolling with the word spiritual being.
Ah, yeah.
Just that's helpful.
Yeah, good.
Yahweh is your spiritual being.
Yahweh is your spiritual being, which means all
he
kinds
is
of things.
The spiritual being of spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm. Of all spiritual
of
beings.
Of all spiritual beings.
Yeah. This is that classic biblical phrase. It's a Hebrew turn of phrase. You put two nouns next to each other, the first one singular, the second one plural. And what you mean, it's a way of saying this is the ultimate of that thing.
Is that how this is? Those both are plural.
The Elohim of Elohim. Right, but the first one's singular in meaning because he's the Elohim of Elohim.
Okay.
It's just like the Holy of Holies.
Right.
Or the Song of Songs.
So the most spiritual of beings.
Ultimate Elohim.
The ultimate.
Among all other Elohim. So notice here, it presumes like whether or not they are real. Again, we'll talk about that. It presumes that people think they are. People believe in other Elohim. Many Elohim are available to give your allegiance to.
Well, and if we're just talking about Elohim in terms of spiritual beings, then I'm not as worried.
See, isn't that interesting? Once you stop using the English word God.
Yeah.
But the word, there you go. I mean, it means deity.
Elohim means deity?
I'm sorry. You're right. Because of Samuel. The Samuel.
Right.
It's the Samuel instance.
If by deity you just mean spiritual being.
A disembodied spiritual being. Yeah. Usually quite powerful. All right. So let's look at another example. This one's from the book of Deuteronomy. And it's from a poem where Moses is anticipating the idolatry of the Israelites when they go into the promised land. And he says that they're going to, this is Deuteronomy 32, verse 17. He says that they're going to sacrifice to demons. It's a Hebrew word for demons, shedim, demons, which means like malevolent, bad spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. Demons that are not Eloah, singular. And then the parallel line is, they are going to sacrifice to Elohim that they had not previously known. So notice this is a poetic parallel line. Mm-hmm. The Israelites, they sacrifice to demons that are not Eloah, they're Elohim that they had not previously known. This is another good example that sounds funky in English.
It's really confusing.
But it makes perfect sense in Hebrew. So
they're not Eloah.
They are
so
not.
So they're not spiritual beings.
Ah, but remember, Eloah is singular.
Oh, Eloah is singular.
Eloah is singular. It just means God.
Is El always singular?
Mm-hmm. Oh. El and Eloah are the singular forms.
So they're not the God.
They're not the God, but they are Elohim.
Mm.
What are these other beings called in this poetic line?
Yeah, the demons.
They're called demons in one line, and which means spiritual beings that will... worship of them will lead to destructive human behavior, destruction. And then in the next line, they're called Elohim that your ancestors didn't know, didn't worship. So once again, if you look in your English translations, actually, I think if I'm just going to look it up. I'm pretty sure all our English translations in that second line use the word gods in the plural.
Hmm.
Yeah, they sacrifice to demons that are not gods that they had not previously known. Now, oh, that's interesting. That's the NIV. The ESV translates, they sacrifice to demons that were no gods. So they take the singular Eloah and they make it a plural in English. To gods that were not known. That's interesting. I wonder why they made that decision. Anyway.
That's confusing.
It is confusing, but you see why these words are confusing. To try and bring these words across into English is actually difficult.
Yeah. Yep.
Because of...
as soon as you use the word spiritual beings, it's not difficult anymore.
Sure. Yeah. It eases the tension. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually,
so why don't we just...
Yeah.
Do
I have a friend who... he's a pastor, and he was trying to talk about this to his church community.
Yeah.
And so he was using the plural word gods.
Mm.
And a whole bunch of people
got frustrated.
Oh, their heresy alert went crazy.
That's what I'm saying.
Because he was talking
that's why I kept
other gods.
Yeah.
And the whole point is that the word gods, this word in the Bible.
It's the wrong English word.
It's
the wrong English word.
God is a confusing, unhelpful word. In the English language.
You know, you don't have to use it at all in the Bible then, right? Because you've got spiritual beings.
Yeah.
You got Yahweh.
Yeah.
Or the Lord.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got angels and demons. And there's no reason to use the word God.
Yeah, it's fat. Yeah. And this is a debate that Bible translators have. When you come to a word that whose meaning has developed so much that it's not a useful word anymore, the challenge is, do you just use it anyway and try and redefine it? Mm-hmm. In its biblical meaning, or do you just ditch it and find a new word? And that's fascinating to think that the English word God has actually become a hindrance to clear communication.
Yeah, I don't think you could actually lose the word God because...
Yeah. No, it's too much of a fixture.
Yeah. Do you believe in a spiritual being? Also, that's confusing.
Okay, here's a New Testament example that's interesting. In the New Testament, especially for these Jewish authors, they grew up reading the Greek and Hebrew scriptures. So they're using Greek, but they're thinking and often in Hebrew. And Paul the Apostle is a good example. So the Greek word, you know this, you studied some Greek in college, the Greek word for God.
Theos or theos?
Yeah. Yep, theos, yep. Mm-hmm. So in 1 Corinthians 8, you have new followers of Jesus who used to go down to the corner temple to whatever, Apollo or Zeus, and eat meat from a sacrificial lamb offered to Zeus. And the question was, hey, should we still do that anymore? Can we do that? And he says he thinks it's a bad idea to go there and eat it. But if you get that meat and bring it into your home, he says it's no big deal. Unless there's someone around that it's going to cause problems for.
Yeah.
But so this is how he opens that paragraph in 1 Corinthians 8. He says, therefore, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And that there is no God but one.
What does he mean, there's no such thing as an idol in the world?
Yeah, he doesn't mean idols
don't exist.
Obviously,
there are idols.
Yes, yeah. So, that idols are idols. That idols are no thing in the world.
They're no thing in the world?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
So, you live in a world where there
are not important.
Literally hundreds of idols.
Yeah.
On the street, in the marketplaces, in everywhere, in town hall, in people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
People do all kinds of rituals to them.
Yeah.
They fear them. They treat them like little people.
Mm-hmm.
They kiss them.
Mm.
They bow to them.
Yeah.
And the Jewish Christian conviction is those idols are no thing.
They have no power. They don't represent anything.
They're wood and metal.
Well, then that's a thing.
They're not. Yeah, totally. Yeah, right.
What I mean, it's like coming into Portland and saying,
that's right.
What he means is,
because the parallel is, there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and there is no God but one.
Okay.
Those pieces of wood are not Elohim, plural or singular. That idol is not a theos.
Got it.
It's a piece of wood.
Okay.
And so he's saying, listen, concerning food sacrificed to idols,
there's nothing spooky about that piece
of wood carved like Zeus down at the temple.
Yeah.
And the fact that a piece of meat was dedicated to it, whatever. It's a piece of wood.
It's not an idol. It's a piece of wood.
It's a piece of wood. It's not a god.
Yeah.
It's not a spiritual being.
It doesn't represent.
It's a piece of wood. No, he doesn't say it doesn't represent, because look what he goes on to say.
Okay.
He says, so there's no such thing as an idol in the world, and there's no god but one. For even if there are so-called gods in heaven or on earth, and indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God. And then he goes on to define what God is: our God, the Father, and the Lord Jesus Christ.
He's sounding really schizophrenic.
Exactly. In English, it sounds like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But in biblical Elohim thought, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is that piece of wood isn't a deity.
Okay.
It's a piece of wood.
It's not a spiritual being.
Yes. Now he says, and that's how people treated these pieces of wood and metal.
Yeah.
They treat them, they revere them, they kiss them, they weep before them, they cry out to them. And he's just like, it's a rock.
Yeah.
It's a piece of wood.
Okay.
But there are so-called gods and lords in the world. We do know that. So in other words, he's acknowledging that even though people might think that the wood or the rock is a god, he's saying it's not.
But
people are connecting themselves to spiritual beings that are real, and he calls them so-called gods.
What's that in Greek? So-called.
Theos. It's the plural of theos.
Why do we put so-called in front?
Oh, got it here. That is his, I'm certain that's his phrase, but I'm just going to double check. The so-called. there are many called gods, named gods.
Okay. In English, when you say...
So-called.
So-called.
It's kind of pejorative. It's kind of like, but we know that
we know
not
there's
real.
No gods, yeah.
Yeah. So it's the passive of the word speak. There are many gods spoken of.
Hmm.
In heaven and on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, then he goes on to affirm, there are spiritual beings out there, many gods and many lords.
And lords meaning
Ah, yeah, referring to, I think, spiritual beings.
Spiritual beings that have some sort of dominion.
Dominion, correct, yeah. Okay. And that's because he's Jewish, and he knows that there are real spiritual beings that have been given dominion by God. We're not there yet. That they're under God's authority, and that they're real. There are Elohim out there that are real spiritual beings.
So what he's saying is that piece of wood people are sacrificing meat to, don't sweat it. It's just a piece of wood.
It's just a piece of wood.
It's not a spiritual being.
Yes.
So there's nothing weird with the meat. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
And for us, we know and give our allegiance to one God.
So eat the meat.
His point is there's nothing spooky magical about the meat.
Yeah,
it's
because nothing, that wood statue can't do anything to the meat besides maybe give a nice smoky flavor to it if you burnt it underneath it.
Right.
But
so that's his first point.
But that's his first point. And then he says,
but then he doesn't want to be misunderstood as saying, now I'm not saying there's no other spiritual
beings. So he doesn't want you to go from there and go, oh, okay, there's no other spiritual beings.
Correct.
He's saying, no, there are spiritual beings. And they have many names, and they have dominion over things, and we need to watch out for them.
Yes, and yet for us, there is one God. So notice this claim, there is for us one God, answers two things. First of all, he can say, it's just a piece of wood. There's nothing, there's no reality to it. It's just a piece of wood, it's not a God. And for us, there's one God. So we know who the ultimate God is, that's just a piece of wood. There's no problem here. But then, now I don't want to be misunderstood as
saying, when he says there's one God.
Mm-hmm. There's no God but one.
Yeah, right. What does that mean?
We'll talk about that, but it's why I put this example last before the next. The conversation
there is
about
no
monotheism.
God.
There's no God but one. So is he saying only one spiritual being exists?
Well, no.
No, because what's the next thing he says? Yeah. Now, there are many named gods and lords, but for us, remember, there's only one God. And then he goes on to name that one God as being the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ, to which a pagan would be, oh, so you believe in two gods? And then he would say, no, just the one God of Israel, who is Father and Son and Spirit. But that's... getting down the line.
So you're going to explain what he means by there is no God but one.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to know.
What he doesn't mean is there are no other Elohim. There's no other Theos. There's no other spiritual being.
Yeah.
He doesn't mean that.
Right.
Because in the next sentence he says there are.
Yeah.
So.
Well, couldn't he be saying there are in theory?
Well, if he wanted to say in theory, he would say that.
But well, he says so-called.
He says there are, but that's an English translation that is putting a pejorative spin on it. There are many gods spoken of.
Yeah.
And then in the next sentence, and indeed, there are many gods and many lords.
He's pretty explicit there.
Yeah. So he says there's some that are just spoken of.
Yeah.
So we don't know, maybe they're real, maybe they're not real.
Right.
But you've read your Hebrew Bible.
There are
many gods and lords.
Okay.
But for us, we give our allegiance to the one God.
So you're saying for us there's one God, it means for us there's allegiance to one God.
Yes. To say, for a Jewish person to say there is no God but one doesn't mean that there are no other spiritual beings that could be called Theos or Elohim.
Hmm.
What it means is my allegiance alone is to the God that I believe is the supreme Elohim over all the other Elohim. That's what he's saying here.
Does it mean more than just we have allegiance to just this one God? Because it seems like when he says there's no God but one, it seems like he's saying more like there's only one.
Yeah, I hear that.
God that's important.
Yeah, I hear
something.
So, and here he's actually just borrowing a phrase from Deuteronomy and Isaiah that we'll look at a little bit later.
Okay.
It's often misunderstood to mean to be a claim that there are no other spiritual beings. But he goes on to say in the next sentence that there are. So that can't, are you with me? Just like to say he has a coherent brain.
I'm with you.
He can't say, there's no other spiritual being, and then in the next sentence say, now, we know there's many other spiritual beings. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So for
that's
him
what
to
I said.
Say,
at first, it sounds really schizophrenic.
Exactly. That's yeah. right. Yeah. And that's an English problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. So are you with me? Elohim, there's one refers to spiritual beings.
Yep.
Biblical faith is oriented towards one particular Elohim, and the claim is that it's that Elohim's the most powerful, the creator, ruler of all, and that Elohim's personal name is revealed as Yahweh.
Yeah.
The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all that. Okay. So, in light of all that, what then does it mean to say there is one like the Shema, hear, O Israel, the Yahweh is our Elohim, Yahweh is one, or Yahweh alone.
Yeah.
Or what does it mean for a Jewish monotheist in Paul's day to say, now we know there is no God but one. So what did they mean when they used this one?
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bible Project podcast. Next week, we're going to pick right back up and continue to talk about the identity of God in the Bible. Specifically, we're going to look at the Shema, the famous Jewish prayer found in Deuteronomy.
And the famous line in the Shema, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. Yahweh is our Elohim. Yahweh is one. So does that one mean that there is only one Elohim, one God? Well, that's the question.
Next week, we'll explore that question. In the meantime, check us out at thebibleproject.com. We have free resources like videos and other podcasts and blog posts and study notes, and it's all for free. This episode was edited and produced by Dan Gummel with music by Tay the Producer. Thanks for being a part of this with us.
Hi, this is Nancy. I'm from Wenzhou, China. 你好,我是Nancy, 我来自温州,中国温州。 What I like best about the Bible Project is that it provides framework for me to understand what each book of the Bible is. Because, yeah, for a lot of the Bible books, one of the first times I read it, it could be very overwhelming, especially for books like Leviticus and those things. And so watching the Bible Project really helps me to understand the theme of that book and helps me to remember. We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, study notes, and more at thebibleproject.com. Okay. 我们相信圣经是一个统一的故事，让我们学习到耶稣是谁。它是Bible Project是通过像我一样的人们来一起赞助来支持。 你可以去BibleProject.com来找到免费的视频、学习的资源、还有更多的东西。
Beautiful.
Wow. Okay.